Welcome to the Cell Culture Dish podcast, Inside Atlas, Transforming Surfactant Monitoring in Bioprocessing. I'm Brady Sargent, editor of the Cell Culture Dish. Joining me today is Brian Hassel, founder and CEO of Neuren, and Hannah Farrell, analytical scientist at Neuren. Thank you so much, Brian and Hannah, for being with us today. We're here to talk about surfactants, and they are essential but hard to monitor components in modern biologics, vaccines, and cell therapies. But Neuren's Atlas platform is changing that and changing how drug makers think about at-line data, and I'm excited to talk to you both about that today. I want to dive a little bit more deeply into the science, and surfactants are notoriously difficult to quantify, especially in complex samples. What makes Atlas's spectroscopy platform so accurate and reliable?
The real breakthrough with Atlas is speed with confidence. Time to market for biopharma is increasingly critical, yet currently we're seeing that a lot of critical decisions rely on data from assays that might take days or months to turn around. And the Atlas delivers really high quality quantitative insights in under a minute, and that really changes everything. So we're seeing a big pull from pharma to use Atlas to really compress the development timelines and de-risk scale-up and eliminate tech transfer headaches. So it's not really just about faster data. It's also about confidence earlier when it really matters.
Brian, here's another question for you. You've replaced traditional PLS with iterative optimization technology. What does that unlock in terms of speed, robustness, or sample flexibility?
Yeah, what really makes Atlas's spectroscopy platform so accurate and reliable is our core technology, which is what we call high-precision tunable laser spectroscopy. And it's really just a next-generation type of optical method for doing near-infrared spectroscopy. And we've really been able over the last couple of years to optimize that to a, just the next kind of gen of repeatability, transferability. And so what we've really focused on is making sure that each instrument looks the same, all the data looks the same. And that's a really critical feature for these types of instruments.
Beyond the high laser repeatability and very low noise levels we have, we've also been able to take that tunable laser system and put it into a format where you don't need to do any sample prep. So unlike some other methods where you may have to do sample prep to actually analyze your surfactant, when you take away having to do any dilutions or spin down even, it really reduces your potential error by so much since you no longer have a method accuracy that overlays onto your analysis and instrument accuracy. So even in that context, we can measure the matrix, which is one of the great things about a multi-analyte analyzer, let's call it. And by measuring the matrix, you don't have any matrix effects. Whereas with traditional techniques, you have to worry about the matrix effects, the suitability of the system, the method accuracy, and the instrument accuracy on top of the interference from other analytes.
Brian, just to follow up, you've replaced traditional PLS with iterative optimization technology. What does that unlock in terms of speed, robustness, or sample flexibility?
Yeah, the big difference between PLS and the iterative optimization technology type framework is it's largely around the training data that's required for PLS. And also with PLS and multivariate models, I think there's questions and debate around the robustness and transferability from different scales. So where a PLS model would require, say, at least in bioreactors, it can take to 30 runs to build a training data set, we are able to get data on the fly without that training data. And similarly, in downstream applications, it would require kind of an extensive design of experiments to explore the space of the different excipients and concentrations. And so we really provide a direct measurement of the individual components. Aside from the speed and robustness aspect to that, I think there's also an increasingly powerful concept of the compliance associated with that we can really prove the measurements also, because we're kind of taking out that layer of, you know, modeling or machine learning and things like that.
That really makes a lot of sense and helps us to understand the technology behind it. We're also interested in how the Atlas is being used in the real world. And so, Brian, I'll ask you a follow-up question on that. Atlas delivers results in under a minute with no sample prep. That's huge compared to traditional methods. I'm wondering, how are biomanufacturers using that speed to reduce batch risk or support continuous processing?
It's, again, the speed with confidence without complexity. For batch processes, we're seeing that users want to use the Atlas to verify critical parameters like protein and excipient concentrations. And the main point is that it's before committing to the next unit operation. So maybe where, you know, they would send a sample out and have to wait for a really long time to get the data back before going to the next unit operation, or maybe they would just move into it without that data. That's a huge risk. And so just by providing that data immediately, it really is a big de-risking step. And, you know, you can really catch these formulation or prep issues before it turns into another problem and you have to work backwards to debug. For continuous processing, we always say it that you can't really have that without real-time data. And that's essentially what we give you. So with any of the form factors, Atline or flow cells or in situ, it's that real-time quantitative data that can be used to support real-time decisions, which are the core of continuous processing.
That's great. I guess in practice, where is Atlas making the most impact? Is it buffer prep, UFDF, fill finish? And then following on to that, how do you see the no prep advantage playing out in those contexts?
Something interesting on this is that the idea of the most impact, I don't know if we could even say one step has the most impact from this, since all steps impact one another. So really on the buffer prep side, it's a huge advantage to actually be able to measure what you think you've put into solution or what you think your coworker may have put into solution and verify those concentrations before you take that buffer and move into the UFDF or move into fill finish and support those other operations. So really, I see the impact be across an entire process. And when it comes to the no prep advantage, really being able to measure, let's say, buffer concentration and buffer components in the buffer itself without any alterations to it means you are getting a quantitative look at what's in there and not at maybe, let's say, the accuracy of your dilutions of those buffers to do that measurement. And when we do that with no prep, it's also faster than you might with any other technology. So you can use it with confidence instead of at risk. So never have to use something at risk if the risk is taken away because you can measure the variation.
That makes really sense. And I think that's a really great point. I wanted to also touch on a little bit smart biomanufacturing and kind of the future of monitoring. And Brian, I'll ask you, you mentioned Atlas, you know, as a foundation for smart biomanufacturing. And I'm wondering, what does that look like in practice? Are you seeing it used to automate decisions, reduce manual QC, or integrate with digital twins?
Yeah, that's a great question. Unfortunately, we're not there yet. And I think that's largely because sensors like ours don't exist. And so, you know, we are currently in this stage of validating the technology and educating groups on what they can do with the technology. And that will pave the way to automate and integrate. But we're not actually there yet. And that's largely because without real-time data like this coming in, there's not a ton of infrastructure ready to take that type of data and already automate the decisions. So we're working closely with the pharma partners to accelerate that concept, try to move smart biomanufacturing forward as quickly as possible.
To add on to that, really a simple way to say it is that you can't have smart manufacturing or biomanufacturing without sensors to actually do the smart part of it. There is no automation without sensors. And having a sensor that allows us to create the data in real time means you can automate finally, as opposed to trying to automate around problems, let's say. So there is no data and you have to find a way around it. Instead, you have the data and you can find out how to work with it.
I'm also curious if you can share a little bit about how teams are starting to use the Atlas for optimization of surfactant levels or to improve inter-batch consistency, things like that beyond, sort of QC and into other areas.
Yeah, I think you can't have quality if you don't start from a place of quality. So being able to validate those buffer components maybe upfront before you use them is one example of moving a little bit beyond QC. It's more smart manufacturing, but quality by design is a better way of saying it. And there is some optimization you can do with surfactant levels, maybe even removal. I don't know if we can share exactly what other teams are doing with our data and our sensors at this point. But really, when it comes to consistency, making sure you have consistent product in to get consistent product out, as well as measuring that product going out, has been really helpful for many teams beyond just QC, but really into the QBD quality by design approach.
Just to add a thought on to that, when you say, optimizing surfactant levels and with respect to your last question on the areas of impact, I think an interesting concept is that, in really critical unit operations like formulation, you're trying to understand how the excipients and, a critical one like surfactant affects stability. And it's really hard to do that if you don't have confidence in those excipient levels. We hear these incredible stories from end users that they'll send, formulation samples out to an analytical lab and they can have anywhere from 10 to 20% variation. And a lot of times they don't have a huge amount of confidence in the results from those groups. And so you can just imagine that if, to your question of really optimizing things, optimizing surfactants or even all excipients, not only is it important that you have that data faster, but we really need to work to just have better quantitative assays for these chemicals and excipients.
To add even a little bit more onto that, it's that part of even while someone is waiting for those results that they may or may not trust once they receive them, usually you have very few choices but to actually forward process with that material and assume that it will be fine, move at risk. So it's not just speed in terms of reducing the amount of time that they're waiting for a sample, but reducing risk when it comes to using it anyway, and then having to evaluate the samples do come back with strange results, maybe evaluate how big of an impact that is. So risk removal instead of impact reduction is kind of a way to look at that improvement.
That makes sense. And I really love that explanation. Moving on to just talking a little bit about compliance and sustainability, I know people will ask questions about how Atlas is supporting regulatory readiness and especially for GMP workflows, including traceability or surfactant specifications and fill finish. Hannah, could you talk a little bit about the Atlas in those areas?
I think getting data that people couldn't get otherwise really is, I'd say, the foundation to regulatory readiness, especially moving into the future of manufacturing operations. Since it doesn't just come down to a GMP workflow and data integrity, but I think there's a factor where we assume the buffer concentration most of the time. That's a huge risk and something not really covered by most other technologies. And so as you move into a fill finish operation, the specs around your formulation and its concentrations, usually those draw back to just manufacturing documents on scale readings and initials from people saying, I've done this correctly. In reality, that's not always the case. And so really moving that kind of regulatory readiness into a place of saying, by compliance, this conforms, this is good quality, because we have data that supports that quality, as opposed to saying we don't have data that says it wouldn't be.
I did want to mention on the regulatory readiness and compliance, we might be kind of just completely overdoing it on this concept, but it's the quantitative nature of our system and the way that we take samples and scan samples. Hannah mentioned it earlier about, you know, matrix interference with other methods and really how we're able to handle all of those things. There's a really big distinction here in, or I suppose it's better to say that a differentiator from an analytical method perspective, that when you don't have to prep the sample or dilute it or do anything, you can just take it from almost the vial or the line that it's passing through and put it directly onto our system. It relates to what Hannah said. You know, you're removing a level of method error there. You're scanning, you're looking at this sample in its native form. And that's really critical for compliance and regulatory readiness. We can really truly show that what we're measuring is from the sample and that any deviations are not from artifacts due to the analytical method. I think that's a really powerful thing that I think our customers are grabbing onto right now.
I think that's great. And just having that ability makes a huge difference. Another topic that comes up quite a bit is moving towards greener excipients. So Brian, I'll ask you, as pharma companies move in this direction towards greener excipients, how can Atlas help validate those in real time and then also support further sustainability goals?
That comes back a bit to the core technology from one point of view, I suppose. So the core technology is really focused in a unique wavelength range that has a ton of chemical information. And so one of the powers of it is really, as we've seen people develop new excipients, greener excipients, new surfactants, we really can confidently say that our method will be able to measure those. That's kind of the beauty of the near infrared. And like I said, the core tech having just all of this chemical information. So we feel pretty confident that the Atlas and that core high precision tunable laser spectroscopy technology will really be just a instrumental tool as people are developing these new excipients, just because of the breadth of information that we're able to obtain. And supporting sustainability, I think that at a basic level, really, we've designed all of our optics and systems to not use consumables, which is a really, really positive thing. And we've seen some excitement around that, to be honest, because I think in a world that's so focused on making consumables as a business model, and we've taken the approach of listening to the customers and what they need for the future and focusing on not having consumables, we really like to support that initiative.
The next question I want to ask is just, I really want to understand kind of some real world impact of Atlas, because what you've talked about here, it's so important, and the work that you've done to create such a advanced monitoring technology is so impressive. I want to kind of hear a little bit about how it's being used in the real world. And so I'll ask both of you, Brian, if you don't mind starting, but what's one real world problem that Atlas has solved in a way that surprised you or that would have taken days using traditional approaches?
One example that comes to mind was actually one of our very first evaluations with our beta Atlas system. And so we brought it to a lab, and they had a couple groups had heard that we had this instrument and the capabilities. And so we had a couple people from other groups who were interested come, and one person comes up to the instrument and says, "We've had this problem and we don't know where it's coming from. I suspect that it was a stability problem of some sort," because they said, "I think our surfactant levels are way off, but we have no idea where it started in our process. Like, where did it get messed up?" And so they actually had samples from throughout the process, and some of them were betting that one of the people there made the stock incorrectly. And so the first thing we did was measure the stock, and they said, "Well, it should be 10%. And when we measured it, it was 9.999. And everybody kind of was really happy and still confused. They're like, "Oh, well, if it wasn't the stock, then where was it? And so we kind of sequentially went down the line until we found a place where something didn't look the way that it was supposed to. And it helped them debug in real time, kind of working backwards with how to find where some level of the excipient changed. And it was just, from the first experience for me, it was surprising and just really cool to be able to see that in real time. And so I think it really helps pave the way for not doing things like that retrospectively. And so I think just speaking to the excitement of the potential to not be reactive, but really proactive about these things. So that was very, very cool.
And Hannah, do you have a favorite story?
I definitely do. I also love that story, Brian. I don't know that I've heard it yet. Thinking about it as a scientist, I say, I don't know what traditional approach I would actually use to do what you said, do that retrospective on a full process. For me, I've really been pleasantly surprised by how many people really want to use this and are using this for their UFDF applications. We actually did a study with an organization that we presented at a conference about a year ago almost at this point, on exactly this, measuring surfactants in protein solutions and formulations. And we showed we could measure the surfactants, a few different surfactants across a few different concentrations and with different buffer backgrounds, as well as proteins in there. And I remember during this presentation, at some point, someone in the back asked a question and said, I heard the light bulb go off almost. And they said, wait, could I use this for UFDF? And I was so excited by that question, because really, when you think about the UFDF and formulation process step, the traditional approaches are, like Brian indicated in his, they're really retrospective. Once that step is finished, you have consumed your material. It is in your formulation buffer. It has gone through the process step, whether you like it or not. And if there is an issue or there is some sort of deviation, you would never know. And so being able to actually, instead of monitor a step, optimize that UFDF step is one of those really surprising and exciting ways I've seen this technology used. Instead of saying Gibbs-Donnan effect might be happening, being able to measure, take samples in real time and measure, oh, it is happening. I'm losing an analyte, or I'm accidentally enriching an analyte where I don't want to be doing that. I think that's really an amazing problem that we've seen, I don't want to say solved, but a really great approach people have taken to using this technology in a really forward-thinking way.
That's really exciting. I think it's always fun when you have a technology and you put it out there in the world and then see how people use it beyond even sometimes ways you anticipated. It's a neat thing to track and a fun thing to explore. I want to ask another question kind of along those lines of using the technology in new and different ways. Hannah, is Atlas becoming more than a QC tool? I mean, I think you've already talked about some examples just now, but how are your customers using it as a strategic process platform?
Not to be a little cheesy, but I always think it's been more than a QC tool, whether or not maybe we've realized that. Really, you know, getting to this point of being able to do non-retroactive analysis, more proactive analysis, has really been strategic and quintessential. I don't know the right word here. It's been great for so many groups to go beyond that idea of retrospective quality as opposed to quality in, quality out. And as we see more teams moving towards the quality by design mindset and letting data drive process decisions, I think Atlas is really well positioned in terms of technology, in terms of its accuracy, its speed, and all of those factors to really push that process along and help with that quality by design approach as people are starting to put it in their labs and say, what data can I take? How can I use that data? And how is that data maybe better than the perceptions that I had before and the traditional way of approaching a process development platform, whatever it might be?
Yeah, I love that. It's fun to think about how this tool has evolved and all the things it can do moving forward. And I think you're right. It's always important to be thinking about the entire process and not just how a tool can be used in one specific area. And Brian, I'll just add on to that with a question for you. You have 10 pharma clients and NIH backing. things are moving very quickly, it seems, for Neuren. What's next for Neuren and the Atlas platform? Are you building towards a broader role in automated smart biomanufacturing?
Yeah. So what's next for us? I think we have our work cut out for us in terms of technology validation. The very near term is really still about all of what we've been discussing, really educating and proving this technology out. And then beyond that, it really does kind of seamlessly merge into automation and smart biomanufacturing. But we need to do those things together. And I think beyond that, we're currently kind of looking more just at protein-based therapeutics, but we definitely have a line of sight into other modalities, cell and gene therapies and things like that. So that'll definitely be part of our future for sure. I think I'd like to emphasize that for tools like ours, like why we really focus on the validation step is to really realize a future of automation and the concept of smart biomanufacturing. We need sensors and analytics that really deliver on their promise. And so we are, you know, that's the type of company that we are. When we say we can do something, we really work hard to do that and deliver on it. And so we're trying not to really go too fast into a lot of different areas and applications, but really just solve the problems in front of us and do it really well and build that confidence and help the industry move to where it needs to go.
That sounds like a perfect plan. And for the last question, I'd like you guys to look into your crystal balls. And I'm curious where you see surfactant analytics headed in the next 3 to 5 years, and what role Atlas will play in that evolution.
It does come down to fundamentals of the different technologies and different methods in our space. And I mentioned it before, but we have a really unique wavelength range that has all of this chemical information. As Hannah mentioned, we have methods and solutions for matrix effects, matrix interference, things like that. So our goal is really to become the surfactant analytics platform. And considering, as we've discussed already, you know, the transition to different types of surfactants, I'm hoping that Atlas is just go-to instrument for companies as they're developing the new surfactants and new formulations.
It's a slightly different approach, I'd say, to the question. In my past life, in my former role, I did downstream process development. And one of those areas that I really remember saying, like, there's very few, if any, analytics supporting, was in that critical transfer from development into GMP. And surfactants is one of those things without quick and robust methods of measuring. Usually, it's, you assume it is what it is, or you just say the spec is plus or minus 20% for good measure, and you move forward with it. And having analytics, especially around the surfactants, is really going to be critical in the next few years when it comes to that transfer aspect and moving from development into GMP, since the product isn't really a product until it gets that GMP phase. And the Atlas is especially well-tuned for that evolution in providing quick analytics that honestly anyone could use. You know, the manufacturing teams can use, a development team can use, the people even further upstream from that can use it. And being able to provide critical data where right now I think there's almost a gap of data, such as, you know, doing a study on a sterile filter to see if you lose surfactant over that filter. It's not commonly done, except when you get to the very late stages. And being able to do it upfront sooner and quicker, it's one of those examples of like that evolution coming to life.
Well said. That's great. Well, I want to thank you both so much for joining us today. This was such an interesting conversation and such an important technology to share with listeners. And I'll just ask if you, either of you, have anything else that you'd like to add before we say goodbye today.
No, thanks for having us.
Nothing to add except thank you so much. And this has been great.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the Cell Culture Dish podcast. To listen to other podcasts related to the discovery, development, and manufacture of biologics, please visit us at www.cellculturedish.com. And for downstream process topics, www.downstreamcolumn.com.